Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Beit Avichai. I have to do all kinds of different introductions, but tonight is really a distinct pleasure and honor for me to have a teacher come to a place that you work, and a teacher that actually shows us how much a person has to care about his students and love his students like his children, sets an example for, I think, many of us that had the privilege of being students of Rabbi Bravender for many years. So for us, it's really a distinct honor and a pleasure for Rabbi Bravender to speak here this evening on the topic of Asara B'Tevet. Rabbi Bravender.
That's it? The topic is Asara B'Tevet. And the issue is, what exactly are we fasting about on Asara B'Tevet? What is the event in history that caused us to fast? So if you look at the sources that you have in front of you, the first one is a Pasuk in Melachim Bet, which says as follows: "Vayhi b'shnat ha-tri'it l'malcho b'chodesh ha-siri v'asal l'chodesh ba-Nebuchadnezzar." Nebuchadnezzar is an important name in Jewish history. He is God's agent to do bad things to the Jewish people. Now, through the throughout history, there have been a lot of people who vied for this crown. God's agents to do bad to the Jewish people. But Nebuchadnezzar was one of the first. After Paro, Nebuchadnezzar. What did he do? Melech Bavel, he was the king of Bavel, Babylonia. V'hu kohol chaylo al Yerushalayim. V'ichan aleha. He came up against Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim apparently was a strongly fortified city. There was a wall around Yerushalayim that was hard to penetrate. So what he did was, Vayivnu aleha dayek saviv. Dayek. I looked it up. The word. I know what it is. I just don't know what it's called in English. So I looked it up. And in the dictionary that I looked it up in, it said, siege wall. Which made me think that whoever wrote the dictionary also didn't know what the word in English should be. A siege wall. In other words, in order to get through the wall, you have to knock it down. In order to knock it down, you have to pummel it with big stones. In order to pummel it with big stones, you've got to build some kind of a structure which enables you to throw the stones down, or to use some kind of an elementary machine to throw the stones against the wall. And that's a dayik. So the pasuk in Melachim says that Nebuchadnezzar built this dayik. And forever after, we're fasting because he built this wall. They built this wall around the wall which enabled him to conquer Yerushalayim ultimately. And it's hard for me to understand why we celebrate the building of the wall when we are ultimately going to fast on Tisha B'Av. I mean, isn't it true that fasting on Tisha B'Av takes care of the issue of the Churban Beit HaMikdash? I mean, that's what we suffer for and think about and have thought about all these years. Why Asara B'Tevet? What is building the wall around the wall, building the dayik around the wall, cause me forever after to fast? Now you could say, as some have said, that everything has a beginning. And the beginning and the end should not be confused. And after all, it's true that Tisha B'Av was the end. it was the destruction, it was the ultimate, but it was not the beginning. And the beginning, we say, was Asara B'Tevet. And the beginning is also important. It's a lesson. It's a lesson for us all. We know that things happen to us, but they sometimes have a history. And if we ignore that history, we don't really understand what happened. So maybe that's Asara B'Tevet. Maybe Asara B'Tevet is the beginning of it. I don't know. It seems to me that Chazal recognized this idea that everything has the beginning, has a beginning. And when they asked themselves, what was the beginning of Tisha B'Av? What was the first time in history that Tisha B'Av, not Asara B'Tevet, that Tisha B'Av was declared a special day? So you know that that was when the Meraglim, the spies, came back from Eretz Yisrael and caused Am Yisrael to cry in the desert. And that was the beginning of it. That was the first Tisha B'Av. So Chazal said, you know, Tisha B'Av, the destruction of the temple, the end game. That's the end. But where did it start? Where did it come from? Chazal said, well, it came from this denial of Eretz Yisrael. From this attempt to say that if we don't follow exactly the way God wants us to go, that'll be to our advantage. That's what happened with the Meraglim, with the spies. And so Tisha B'Av, when we fast on Tisha B'Av, we're fasting. We're fasting because there is something wrong. Something that has never been righted. And that's what the Pasuk in the Torah say. I'm not going to mention it. But when God mentions, when God punishes us throughout history, it says in the Torah, when we are punished for what we do that we should not have done, that punishment includes a little bit of the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies. So Tisha B'Av does have a beginning. Tisha B'Av begins with the Chet of the Meraglim, but not Asara B'Tevet. Not Asara B'Tevet. So I'm left with that question. What is it exactly that we fast about on Asara B'Tevet? What is the historical context in which this is so important? Now, if you look at the sheet, this is called the sheet. The sheet, is it printed on both sides, or you have two sheets? Both sides? Okay. They tried to save a little money, and it printed on both sides. Okay. Everybody's got to earn a living. So at the bottom of the page, there is a quote from a book called the Abudraham. The Budraham lived in the 14th century. He was one of the Rishonim, an important commentator. And he wrote a book, which is basically a commentary on Tfilot and Mo'adim, on the prayers that we say throughout the year, and on the various holidays that we celebrate. And the book is called the Budraham, after him. That was his name. So the Budraham says this. He's talking about the Arba'at Somot. Arba'at Somot, you know that the prophet Zechariah mentioned that there are four Somot. We'll see it presently. So the Abudraham says this, Chiluk Yesh Beinehem. The four Somot are not all the same. But you have to carefully think about each one. He says, She'arba'at Somot Heim Nidachim Lefamim, Shechalu b'Shabbat. We all know, or if you like scratch your heads hard, you'll see that you know, that when the calendar said that a tzom, a regular kind of fast day, falls on Shabbat, we generally push it off, because we don't give up Shabbat for a fast day. So that's what he says. Yesh b'dem Shabbat atzomot hang nidachim lifamim kshechalu b'Shabbat. They push them off. You push the fast off. You have Shabbat, and then you have the fast. And then he says this. Listen, chutz mi'asara b'tevet. Chutz mi'asara b'tevet. Except for this fast that we are talking about, asara b'tevet, she'eino chal le'olam b'Shabbat. So he says, according to the way we've organized the calendar, you know that our calendar is an organizational feat. It doesn't just happen. In the time of the Tanaim, and the new moon determined the new month. Our calendar works sort of approximately that way. But if you ever in shul, when they bench Rosh Chodesh, you know that shul bench Rosh Chodesh. I have to determine what the audience I'm talking to is. So you know there's somebody gets up and says, the molad is, and it's always the wrong day. You know, in other words, the reason he announces the molad is because it's not when we celebrate Rosh Chodesh. If it was when we celebrated Rosh Chodesh, there'd be hardly any point to announcing the molad, right? Sometimes they announce it in Yiddish so that it should be more mysterious. But in spite of that fact, we have a kind of a fixed calendar that works on a 19-year cycle, and it repeats itself over and over again. So according to that fixed calendar, this is what the Abu Draham says. He says, Asara B'Tevet never falls out on Shabbat. That's how it's organized. Never falls out on Shabbat. This year, Asara B'Tevet is not today. It's not even tomorrow. It's Sunday, right? Asara B'Tevet is Sunday. So listen to the Abu Draham. He says, Chutz mi'asara b'tevet, she'eino chal le'olam b'Shabbat, aval hu chal lefamim b'yom shishi. Sometimes Asara B'Tevet falls out on Friday. U'mitanim bo by bo vayom. And so you fast on Friday. You don't move it around. We fast on Friday. Like Yom HaTzma'ut, we don't allow it to happen on Friday. Right? Because we're worried about Chilul Shabbat. But when it comes to fasting, Asara B'Tevet on Friday, you figure everybody's too tired to too much Chilul Shabbat, so it's not such a big problem. So he says, Mit'anim bo bayom, we fast on Friday. Now the punchline. You ready? Good. Mit'anim bo bayom, b'afilu hayachal b'Shabbat lo hayu yicholim litchoto liyom acher. But if it would fall on Shabbat, right? In other words, if we didn't have the fixed calendar that we use, if we were dependent on seeing the new moon for the new month, and if it were possible for Asara B'Tevet to fall out on Shabbat, then the Abu Draham says, lo ayu yicholim litchoto liyom acher. We could not push it off to another day. Mipnei she'nemar, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says, be'etzem ayom hazeh, about Asara B'Tevet, that it's be'etzem ayom, on this very day. You can't move it. And he says, kimo b'yom ha'kippurim. Everybody knows that Yom HaKippurim sometimes falls out on Shabbat. And when Yom HaKippurim falls out on Shabbat, who wins? Yom HaKippurim wins. Right? There are several reasons for that. But he says Yom HaKippurim wins because it says Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh, which kind of means don't move it. Don't move Yom HaKippurim. It is what it is. Falls out on Shabbat, falls on Shabbat. Aval Sha'ar HaTzomot Einan Chalim La'olam B'Yom Shishi. But the other tzomot, the other fasts, never fall on. We don't complete the fast on Yom Shishi. So here, the Abu Draham came up with this idea. He said, if it would be possible for Asara B'Tevet to fall out on Shabbat, we wouldn't have Shabbat. We wouldn't have Shabbat. We wouldn't have Onik Shabbat. We wouldn't have Kavod Shabbat. We wouldn't have Shabbat. We would just have Asara B'Tevet. We wouldn't eat. which turns out to be rather a remarkable comment, because the interpretation of that comment is that in some way, Asara B'Tevet is the most important, the most significant, the most weighty of the four fasts that we know. And so what we have to look for now is what could the Abu Draham have possibly meant? Now, I don't want to keep any secrets, so I'll just add one point. The Beit Yosef is the name of the commentary that was written by Rabbi Yosef Karo on the tour. Beit Yosef, commentary of Rabbi Yosef Karo on the tour. Rabbi Yosef Karo, one of the most influential Jews of all time. Right? His knowledge was encyclopedic. His ability to arrange things was wondrous. And he mentions this Abu Draham. He mentions this Abu Draham, this statement in the Abu Draham, and he says, I don't know where he got this from. I don't know where this comes from. And therefore, I don't include it as a regular halakha. I just wanted to mention that. But in fact, the Abu Draham does say it. And he says it in a complicated way so that we should not think that it was just stam a dream that he had. But it was something that he roots in a drasha, in a pasuk, because it says, Ki beyom hazeh. So we are interested in following the Abu Draham and trying to understand in what way could this be understood? How could we imagine that the fast of Asara B'Tevet is somehow more important, more significant, more dominant than the other three fasts? So first, I turn your attention to a pasuk in Haggai. You see number 3 on the page? Haggai. Haggai was the first prophet of Shivat Zion. Shivat Zion, again, the destruction of the first temple is 586 BCE. It's a good date to remember. 586, it's easy. 586 BCE. You know BCE? Yeah, well, good. Am Yisrael returned back to Eretz Yisrael 535 BCE. It may have been 536 or 534, but it doesn't matter to me. I always say 535. 535, the Jews started to come back to Eretz Yisrael, a small number of Jews, led by Zerubbabel. That was his name. Zerubbabel. And the first thing they wanted to do was rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. The first thing that they wanted to do was to work at rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash that had been destroyed, which meant they had to build an altar. And they started finishing the walls around Yerushalayim and then building a wall around the Beit HaMikdash. This all took a lot of time. And the first prophet who came with Shivat Zion, with the return to Eretz Yisrael at that time, his name was Haggai. He was the first prophet. And his book, the book of Haggai, is one of the books of the Treyasar, the 12 small prophets, small books. They're small books. They're not historically connected, but they're all smaller. So they're kind of in a collection called Treyasar. So the pasuk that we're interested in is this. See number 3? Gadol yekvod habayit hazeh acharon min harishon. Amar Hashem tzivaot v'makom hazeh ten shalom. Nu'um Hashem tzivaot. Haggai looks around. And the situation was not good. The people were not happy. Poverty was rampant. That was like similar to Eretz Yisrael in the beginning of the 20th century. The situation didn't look good. There was nothing to be overwhelmingly happy about. There was an enemy within and an enemy without. The enemy within were the Samaritans, who fought every inch of the way against the Jews, building a temple in Yerushalayim and building the wall around Yerushalayim. And inch by inch, literally, Am Yisrael prevailed at that time. But prevailing meant suffering. It meant that they had to tax themselves. They had to lose the money that they might have made working their own in their own businesses in their own land. Instead, what they did was they donated time and effort and money into rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash. And so along comes Haggai. And Haggai, he wants to be encouraging. He wants to tell the people that they're doing the right thing, that good things are going to happen. And so he says, here, the English. You see the English? What looks like English on the sheet? It's really English. I'll read it. The glory of the last house shall be greater than the first one. Here's Haggai. You imagine the scene. Everybody knows Shlomo HaMelech built a wondrous building. Not only was it a wondrous building, it was filled with miracles. Miracles that happened every single day. Big miracles, small miracles. Those of you who remember the last chapter of Pirkei Avot, there's a Mishnah that says that there were 10 miracles that happened in the Beit HaMikdash. We're talking about the Beit HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech. And none of these miracles were reproduced. Also, in the second temple, there was no Aron Kodesh. No Aron Kodesh, no Luchot. There was no Ark. There were no tablets in the Ark. There was no staff of Aaron. There was no man. All the things that were there. But in fact, when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh Kadashim on Yom HaKippurim, in the second temple, what did he see in that room? Nothing. There was nothing in that room except the Eben Shtiyah. Eben Shtiyah, this stone, which in Chazal conception of things was kind of the bedrock of creation. That's all that was left. The only thing that the Babylonians left was that stone that was embedded deeply into the ground. And here comes Haggai, a recognized prophet, a man who is bringing the word of God to Bnei Israel, wants to encourage them. And he says to them, this temple that you are building is going to be greater than the temple of Shlomo HaMelech. Imagine that he's standing there, you know, standing in Jerusalem. He's walking in the streets. He's getting the people together. And he says, this is going to be the greatest. And the people look at what they built, how poor it is, how insignificant it is, how just start-up it is. And he says it's going to be the greatest. That it's going to be the greatest. And you know that even though at the end of the period, at the end of the period of the Chashmonaim, it was just Hanukkah, right? The end of the period of Chashmonaim, the king, Herod became king. The Herod was not a nice fellow. He was not even too Jewish. And he decided to glorify the temple, to make it bigger, to make it nicer. Okay, that's true, but that was really right at the end, right before the destruction of the temple by the Romans. And Herod was a bad guy, Jewishly a bad guy. Okay, he wanted to build a nice building, but it can't be that the temple is a nice building. It's hard to imagine that Haggai was referring to the temple of Herod. And so what was he referring to? I mean, if we assume that Haggai's prophecy was truly a prophecy, and if we assume that Haggai knew what he was saying, or he meant something, which, you know, for the purposes of this discussion is the way we will assume. So what was it that Haggai might have been referring to? Okay. So I want to tell you something that the Rambam said. don't know if we'll read it all, but here you see this number five. You see number five is the Rambam? The Rambam. If you look down in the Rambam to the... We'll do it all quickly. If the Hebrew is daunting, don't get annoyed. It's only Hebrew. And it shouldn't be daunting. I'm not sure why we're doing this in English. Oh, now I'm sure. Anyway, look at the Rambam. The Rambam says in Hilchot Melachim, this part of the Rambam was for a thousand years censored out of the Rambam and was just returned into the printed editions of the Rambam in the Mossad Rav Kook edition of the Rambam. And then since that time, everybody, all the editions of the Rambam include this. So we're now going to learn the censored part of the Rambam. The Rambam says this. This first part is not censored, but after that, I'll tell you where the censored part starts. Im yamod melech mibeit David hogeh b'torah v'osek b'misvot k'David aviv. This is when there's a king in Israel who is interested in mitzvot, like David HaMelech, King David. K'fi torah shebichtav v'shebal peh. ויחוף כל ישראל ילך בה ולחוק בדקה וילחם מלחמת השם הרי זה בחזקת של משיח. He says, you know what a Mashiach is? A Mashiach is the one who turns everything right, who makes everything that should happen happen. That's what a Mashiach is. So if there is such a king in Israel, he is the Mashiach. Im yasa ve'etzliach v'nitzach kol ha'umot she'sviva v'bana mikdash v'mkomo v'kibes nitchei Yisrael arei zeh Mashiach v'vaday. And if he does all the things that we ask for in Shmona Esra, he rebuilds Shmona Yerushalayim and he brings all the Jews together and all the nations of the world accept his authority, he's certainly the Mashiach. V'im lo etzliach ad kol o ne'erag. If he's not successful, or if he dies, and there have been false messiahs in Jewish history, he says that this is not the promise of the Torah. He's just another king, but he's not the Mashiach. Etc. So if you look at the next line, the sixth line, the third word. This is the part that is censored, that was censored, that is now uncensored. Censored, uncensored. Af Yeshua HaNotzri. You know who that is? Excellent. Broad general knowledge, that's very important. Af Yeshua HaNotzri, he says, you know, the Rambam, in his own lifetime, suffered from Christians and suffered from Muslims. For 12 years of his life, his family wandered around in North Africa, first in Spain, then in North Africa, finally ending up in Egypt, as you know. And yet he says, Af Yeshu HaNotzri, Shedamai, this Nazareth, the person from Nazareth, Shedama, he imagined Sheyem Mashiach v'nerag b'beit din, that he was going to be the Messiah, and he was killed in a Jewish Beit Din. That's what the Rambam says. Kvar nitnabei bo Daniel. He's already Daniel, who was in the exile, right? Who lived between the Babylonian exile and the return to Eretz Yisrael. So it's way before the Nazareth, right? Daniel, and there's a pasuk that says b'nei pritzi yinazu la'amid chazon v'nichshalu. There are those who tried to take over, but they failed. V'zegaram la'beit Yisrael b'cherev l'fazer sheritam l'ashpilam l'achlif ha'torah v'la'ot rov ha'olam l'avod eloka b'eloha. And he says the Christians confuse things, and they caused tremendous distress to Am Yisrael, and they brought down we were oppressed because of that, and so they were really terrible people representing the ideas that he brought into the world. Aval. And so now here, the Hasidish, the Rambam, sometimes you can understand the Rambam in a Hasidish way. So the Rambam says, like he's sitting there. Imagine the Rambam sitting someplace, talking to his Talmidim. And he said, well, who needed them? I mean, who needed these Christians? What did we gain from Christianity? And like, that's like the Hasidic way of thinking about things. Not so much what did they do to us, but how did they come to be? I mean, what purpose did they have? What was God thinking, so to speak, when he allowed this whole thing to happen? This whole thing meaning Christianity. Who needs it? So the Rambam says, V'chiyesh mechshol gadol mizeh shekol neviim dibru. I'm sorry, aval machshavot. It's highlighted. That's why I didn't see it. It's always a problem with highlighting. Aval, you see it? Aval machshavot borei olam en koch ba'adam la'sigam ki lo darcheinu derachav v'lo machshavoteinu machshavotav. So it's an introduction. You know, when I'm going to explain something, so I say, well, I mean, I know I don't really understand it, but this is what I would say. Now, that's what the Rambam is doing. The Rambam says, it's really chutzpah on our part to try to understand what God's intention was when something happens in the world. But even though it's a little bit of a chutzpah, I'm going to do it anyway. That's what the Rambam says. I'm going to do it. And listen to the Rambam's idea. Machshivot borei olam kol ba'adam la'sigam. Right, the kol ha'dvarim ha'ele shel Yeshua ha'notzri. All of these things that happened as a result of Jesus. Because I Yishmaeli. Does he want to mention Muhammad? You know Muhammad, the most popular name for a baby boy in Israel? Sha'amad acharav. Muhammad was after Jesus. Einam ela liyasher derech lemelech ha-mashiach v'negin et ha-olam kulo la'avod et Hashem b'yachad. So I always explain. I always say, when I learned this Rambam, I always say, you know, the world is going to be a better world. And someday, everybody will understand that the Torah is the Torah, and that if you do the mitzvot, it's really better. It's a better life. It's a response. It's a response to divine will. I mean, what could be better than that? But we have no time for that. We have no time to explain that to the world. Because we're too busy learning Daf Yomi, going to Sheyurim, trying to understand this halacha, that halacha. We have time. We're going to go talk to Goyim about ultimate realities. Who has time for that stuff? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent messengers who do that. They do that for us. So he says, what was the great achievement, the Rambam himself said, what's the great achievement of Christianity? That they declared that the Old Testament is true. Now, it may be that they also said that the Old Testament has been surpassed by a New Testament, but you cannot deny, they cannot deny. If you've ever been in a motel on the road someplace, you know, you open the top drawer, out comes the Gideon Bible. The Gideon Bible has the Old Testament in it. Because that's part of the deal. That is part of the deal, the Old Testament, so that the Christians are the ones who prepared the world for the next world, for the world of the Messiah, according to the Rambam. The same thing is true about Muhammad, who didn't adopt the Old Testament, but many of the stories of the Old Testament, the characters of the Old Testament, the people of the Old Testament, the prophets of the Old Testament, especially the prophets, are included in the Quran. And all of this according to the Rambam, so that the Messianic era can actually happen. Because as you know, you can't just cop a new idea because it comes into the world. It doesn't work that way. You have to be prepared. You have to understand. I mean, you can't have, if you didn't know that there was electricity, you wouldn't understand much about computers. Right? You have to know that there's electricity, so everything has its developmental stage, and you have to absorb the material so that the world has to also be aware of the Messianic era in its way. In its way, not in the way we are obliged to think about it, but in the way that without them there can be no actual understanding of what is going on. So about this, remember the pasuk in Haggai. The pasuk in Haggai refers to kavod, and the word kavod is translated in this English translation as glory. I don't know what glory is. I know what glory is, but I know that if I read a passage that had the word glory in it, I would just assume that everybody else understood it, at least as well as I, in spite of the fact that I don't know exactly what the word means. The word kavod, however, is a word that describes the manifestation of God's presence. Even though it's true that God is every place and God can do everything, nevertheless, each person understands that there are some places where his relationship to the presence of God is different, is special, is intense. And for some people, it's the shul they go to. For some people who have the good fortune, it's the Kotel Maravi. For some people, it might be Keber Rachel. Whatever it is, it's a legitimate notion that the kavod of Hashem is found more intensely in some places than in others. This is a legitimate idea. And so it may be that what Haggai was referring to was not the way the building looks. And even though the pasuk you see in the second, in number four on the sheet is a pasuk in Melachim where it says, "Vatere Malkat Sheva." Malkat Sheva, you know, was this Ethiopian queen or princess that Shlomo HaMelech married. Et kol chochmat Shlomo, she saw how clever Shlomo was. Rabayit Asher Bana, and she saw the house. She was so impressed by the building that's called the Beit HaMikdash that Shlomo HaMelech built. So it may be that Haggai is not referring to the building, by what the building looks like, but Haggai is referring to the glory of it, that something was tangible about the building that was built in Bayit Sheni, which surpassed Bayit Rishon, and the question is, what exactly might that have been? And so, if you turn over the page, there's a passage here that is from Rav Kook. A passage written by Rav Kook, which I think will help us get through this problem and solve the issue of the Abudraham. Just a few lines. Mibinyan Abayit HaSheni, Mibinyan Abayit HaSheni, Yatzah Ora Lumot HaOlam, Yoter Me'asher Me'Abayit HaRishon. The Rambam says, Rav Kook says, that in what way was the second temple greater than the first? In what way was the second temple remarkable? He says the second temple, the light of Am Yisrael, went out and engulfed the nations of the world. Yoter Mibayit Rishon, V'al Zeh Nirmaz, and the remez, the hint to this event is in the pasuk in Haggai Gadol Yekvod Abayit Acharon, Shezehu Biyachas LeTikun Umot HaOlam. What we described before, when we're speaking about the Rambam, Tikun Umot HaOlam, fixing the nations of the world. How do you fix them? You have to get them to appreciate the idea of Mashiach, of the end of days, that something is happening. Va'al zeh ne'emar, and that's the pasuk, shezeh biyachas l'tikun umot ha'olam, v'hineh nikva, sheyu Yisrael begalut, kedei l'taken et umot ha'olam. Now this is an idea that's found from the Maharal until modern day Hasidut. They asked all the Hasidish Rebbeim, you know Hasidish Rebbeim? They're the ones with funny clothes, right? And, you know, big beards, funny clothes. Hasidish Rebbeim. The Hasidish Rebbeim said, what are we doing here? Here, meaning, they said in the diaspora. We would say, why is there a diaspora? Why did it take 2,000 years to get out of the diaspora? How come after Churban Bayit Rishon, it only took 50 years? 50 years they came back. Here we are after 2,000 years, we have a Medina in Eretz Yisrael for which we should all be eternally and daily thankful for, and still we're arguing about, well, should I live here or should I live there? Should I do this? Should I do that? Well, where am I going to make a living, and where am I going to build a house? And where, you know, this whole, the whole topic, you know, on the conceptual level seems like absolute nonsense. You know, you talk to people and you don't know what they're talking about. You say, here you have an opportunity. The opportunity in the last 2,000 years, this opportunity never came up, and you could live in Eretz Yisrael like a person, and you could choose to live in New Jersey. I mean, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine. But that's what's happening. So here, Rav Kook follows in this tradition where people said, what were we doing in the diaspora for 2,000 years? What were we doing here? So one of the ways of resolving this question was to say, we're here to spread the light. We're not here to be punished. I mean, most of the time that we spent in the diaspora, the years were good years. We produced this tremendous literature called Torah literature. We wrote endless books, shelves upon shelves upon shelves of books written by Jews about Jewish things and Jewish ideas and Jewish hopes and Jewish values. What were we doing here? We were spreading the light. That's what the Maharal said, and that's what Rav Kook said. What do you mean spreading the light? Why would you want to be spreading the light? Because, as we said, in order to usher in the Messianic age, there has to be a certain amount of acceptance that the non-Jews, that the Umot HaOlam, make. And so that acceptance by the world started with Christianity, with Islam. But it continues through Am Yisrael. It continues through Am Yisrael, educating, teaching, being, spreading the light. Spreading the light throughout the world. And that's what Rav Kook shares with us. That Umot HaOlam are what kept us back. Because even though we're ready to go back to Eretz Yisrael, but we are not finished with our job. The job has not yet been done. You know that Rav Nachman of Braslov took a trip to Eretz Yisrael. Nobody knows why exactly. He went to Tzvat and then to Tveri. He got to Tveri, he turned around and he went home. He was here a very short time. And so people say, well, I don't understand. I mean, what was Rav Nachman doing? Why did he leave and then come back? I mean, so I always say, I don't know if I'm right. I mean, I'm excusing myself, but I mean, I think it's a nice thought, so I'll share it with you. Rav Nachman said, the Mashiach has got to come. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the Mashiach. So Rav Nachman said, I'll go to Eretz Yisrael. So he went to Eretz Yisrael, and surprisingly, no one came with him. There were no big crowds that came with Rav Nachman. So he turned around, and he said, I guess we're not ready. I guess the time has not yet come. I better go back to where I came from and try to educate the people who I left behind so that they will understand where they have to come. So he had this double valence. right? The Jews have to educate the non-Jews, the Umot HaOlam, that's what Rav Kook said. And then the Jews have to educate themselves. They have to understand. So the Rav Kook says, you understand, if you look in history, how much positive effect the Jewish people had throughout these years on the world. On the world. And yes, it makes a difference if there's a Jewish Nobel Prize winner or not. It makes a difference. Because it says something about being Jewish and about the effect that Jewishness can have on the world. So maybe the Pasuk in Haggai refers to the fact that unlike Bayit Rishon, when Nebuchadnezzar came and he built a dayik, and the dayik was a kind of a wall that separated Am Yisrael from the nations of the world. The Babylonians didn't want to become Jewish. They didn't want to share the Torah. They didn't want to become part of the larger picture. So that what they actually destroyed was not just the building called the Beit HaMikdash, but they actually destroyed the hope of a bit of unity in the world. Whereas in Bayit Sheni, even though the building was not as impressive, and the setup was not as remarkable, and the miracles were missing, the Aron HaKodesh, the Aseret HaDibrot, were not there. In spite of all that, it seems that in the interaction between the Jewish people and the Greeks, and then the Jewish people and the Romans, it was not just what they did to us, but it was the influence that we had on them. We taught them something about kavod, as Haggai said. Kavod is something that is a remarkable thing. And so the Abudraham says, you know, that it may be that Asara B'Tevet is the most important of all the days. Because Asara B'Tevet is the day that leads to Yemot HaMashiach, that leads to some kind of interactive principle between Am Yisrael and Umot HaOlam. And so I think also Asara B'Tevet enables us perhaps to think about ourselves in this world, which sometimes seems to be a little bit oppressive and offensive. I think we have to work to make the dream of Bayit Sheni, of the Kavod of Bayit Sheni, to come true. I know that we have difficulties, and there are real problems, and even though day to day we might prefer to try to ignore them, there is no doubt that they exist. Nevertheless, we have a long-standing obligation to spreading the light, to making it possible for the nations of the world to be more accepting of the light of the Torah and about the future of Am Yisrael. And while it is true that we are beleaguered, in a sense, and we have to kind of watch our flanks all the time, we also have an obligation to be more filled with the light than others, to be more hopeful about the future. And that may be the message of Asara B'Tevet. All the best.